everybody. This is Caroline Fredrickson. I'm the director of the Washington Legislative Office of the ACLU. I'm here with some other folks from the ACLU. Michelle Richardson and Tim Sparapani are two key lobbyists on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, as well as with Mark Melman, who has done some research to demonstrate where the public stands on the issue of our government spying program and on immunity for the telecommunications companies. So let me just start by saying a couple things. First, I think we all know that that in August, Congress passed the Protect America Act, which the Democratic leaders widely condemned, even though they obviously allowed it to pass, and said that they would come back and fix it after the August recess was over. Well, it's hardly ironic that the day that the Protect America Act expires is the day before Groundhog's Day, because I think we feel like we've all lived through this before. And we're back pretty much where we were in August, where Senator Reid is about to move a bill to the floor that looks an awful lot like the Protect America Act, except with one additional very bad provision, and that's the provision that provides immunity to those telecommunications carriers that, in violation of the law, turned over their customer data to the NSA. You know, at this point, Senator Reid, who is the leader, at least so he's denominated, has a choice between moving forward with the Senate Intelligence Committee bill, which is the Bush administration's preferred bill and which really does eviscerate the main protections of FISA and includes the telecom immunity provisions, or the judiciary bill, which, hardly a perfect piece of legislation, nonetheless does not contain the immunity provisions and also provides greater court oversight in the process of surveillance by our government on American soil. I thought we wanted to do, as we get into this debate, which is supposed to start tomorrow in the Senate, was to remind the public, and hopefully Congress will learn from the public, about where things really stand. And that is that the American public clearly believes, as Mark is going to talk about, just as we demonstrated in the fall with the data that Mark brought forward in the fall, American public still thinks that our privacy rights need to be protected, that there need to be warrants, that there cannot be immunity granted to the telecommunications company that have broken the law. At the ACLU, we've got a whole plan of attack. We're working with a very large number of other organizations who are deeply troubled by the legislation, both the Protect America Act and the legislation that Senator Reid is putting on the floor this week. And those groups range from the large to the small. They range from groups that work traditionally on these national security issues to new groups that have become very, very concerned about the direction of this legislation, including Common Cause, the PIRGs, and others. And so the anger towards the leadership and the unhappiness with the direction of this legislation is only growing. And I think the other thing we want to, and obviously I think reporters are familiar with this pattern, that as we move into this debate, the administration is going to make greater and greater claims of the need to pass this legislation immediately, that if the Senate Intelligence Committee version and telecom immunity are not granted immediately, that there will be some dire consequences and people will die and terrorists will attack and so forth. Well, I think we need to be very careful and make sure that the American public is aware of where this administration is not only stretching the truth but breaking it. And I think people should note that Director McConnell claimed last week that so-called weak wiretapping laws were at fault for the events of September 11th. McConnell said that those planning the attacks were under the radar of law enforcement because they had not broken any laws and there was no probable cause to conduct surveillance. But that's completely untrue. We all know that that information was there and had been gathered. The problem was that it was not analyzed in time. The other thing that we're trying to do to educate the public and to ensure that members of Congress hear from their constituents is that we are running radio ads around the country. We also have a variety of online ads that are running. We're doing a lot of on-the-ground activism. There are a lot of phone calls and emails going into Congress right now. At least, you know, we know that the American public, as Mark is going to talk to you about now, we know that the American public realizes that this is an atrocious piece of legislation. We just hope that Congress and especially its leaders start listening to their constituents. And maybe they are not leaders, but if they could only be followers, they should follow their constituents who know that we need to move in the direction of the Constitution. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mark Mehlman to discuss the research.
Thanks very much, Caroline. Pleasure to be with everyone. What I'm going to be addressing is a survey that we completed last week. It was a survey of 1,000 2008 likely voters done from January 11th to January 15th, margin of error of plus or minus about 3.1% to get the technicalities out of the way. This really updates some work that some or most of you have seen that we did last fall, but we want it to be up to the minute and accurate in terms of the reflections of public opinion that we had. And the bottom line conclusion from this data is very clear. Americans surely want to protect the country from terrorism, but they also insist on protecting our constitutional rights. To that end, Americans vigorously oppose warrantless wiretaps. They strongly support the notion that the government should have to get a warrant before wiretapping the conversations that U.S. citizens have with people abroad. By 63 to 33, almost a 2-to-1 margin, a 30-point margin, people say that the government should have to get a warrant from a court before wiretapping the conversation U.S. citizens have. As I say, that's 63%. Only 33% say the government should be able to wiretap conversations without a warrant, numbers that are very close to what they were in October. Indeed, if anything, a slight movement in the direction of saying the government should have to get a warrant. These are clear and consistent findings. And what I think is striking about these findings and most of the findings that that I'm going to report on is that they do cut across party. They do cut across ideology. They certainly cut across region of the country. For example, in terms of requiring demands, in terms of requiring warrants for wiretapping Americans' international conversations, 72% in the Northeast, 64% in the South, 62% in the West, 57% in the Midwest, all support the notion that the government should have to get a warrant from a court before wiretapping conversations. Second, there is also very strong opposition to blanket warrants, and again, that opposition to blanket warrants cuts across partisanship. Not only do two-thirds of Democrats and 55% of independents oppose blanket warrants, but a majority of Republicans, 51%, a 10-point margin, by a 10-point margin, Republicans oppose these blanket warrants. So again, across the board, we find opposition to the administration's FISA agenda. And indeed, when we give people arguments on both sides, and the text of the arguments are available, we tried to give the administration version in the words that the administration uses. Their argument, Congress should set up a system that allows the government to get a blanket warrant for a year to conduct crucial wiretaps on terrorists communicating with individuals in the United States. They say the courts will still be involved, and that giving the government this authority is critical to keeping Americans safe. They say Congress should not bog down intelligence agencies with administrative burdens by giving terrorists rights. It's a very good summary of the arguments and the very language that the administration is using. We provided people also with an argument against these blanket warrants by more than 2-to-1, by a 40-point margin. Americans, even after hearing the administration's arguments, say that they support individual warrants, not blanket warrants. By 66 to 26, people say we should have the individual warrants. Again, only 26% favor the blanket warrants that the administration is seeking. Third, we looked at the question of the telecommunications companies, and there is, again, overwhelming rejection of the notion of immunity for the telecommunications companies. We gave people two choices here. Should Congress give the companies either immunity or amnesty, I'll come back to that, from legal action, or should people be allowed to take their cases to court and have the courts decide by a very large margin. People said, when we used the word immunity, it was 55 to 35 in favor of letting the courts decide, only against amnesty. When we used the word immunity, it was even a larger majority, by a 24-point margin, people opposed immunity. We did that flip because in the initial question we asked the last fall, we used the word amnesty. There were some people who said, oh, wait a second, that's a little unfair because that word is highly charged in the immigration debate. Perhaps it's just your whole answer here is an artifact of the word immunity. The word amnesty instead of immunity. That is clearly not the case. In fact, as I say, there is more opposition to immunity than there is to amnesty for the telecommunications companies. What that suggests is that this is not a function of just question wording. This is a view that people have. It's a rather deeply held view. It's a robust view. It's not. It's somewhat impervious to the language that we might use, which again suggests it's a real and deeply held view of opposition to the immunity or the amnesty for the telecommunications companies that may have violated their consumers' rights by turning over these private records to the government. Finally, it should be noted that the public thinks these issues are important. This is not a trivial matter. These constitutional rights are not a trivial matter for the American public. More than three-quarters of the American public say it is important for Congress to take action on these matters. So this is these are issues which are of moment to the American people, of real significance. And again, there is overwhelming opposition to blanket warrants. There's overwhelming support for requiring warrants, overwhelming opposition to warrantless wiretaps, and overwhelming opposition to any kind of immunity or amnesty for the telecommunications companies. Perhaps I'll stop there and see if folks have questions or discussion.
Thanks, Mark, so much. And if I could just say one thing before we go into questions, which is that this call is being recorded. So anybody on the call should realize that. We are ready for questions.
At this time, if you do have a question, press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone once. If your question has been answered by a previous caller, press the number 1 again to remove yourself from the question queue. Please note questions will be answered in the order which they are received. Give me one moment while I get our first question. Our first question comes from Ted. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes, hi. This is Ted Gotch with Telecommunications Reports. I wanted just to ask you, it seems from a statement that Senate Majority Leader Reid made today that he is potentially interested in extending the deadline by a month on the existing, I guess, PAA, and wondered what you all thought of that considering the tight deadline and also given that, as you said, the kind of, shall we say, furor that the administration whipped up as right before Congress went on its summer recess about the need for this legislation. Do you think that's a smart move from the perspective you all are coming from, or do you think these delay tactics are only going to extend out the issue and make it worse?
Well, Ted, I think we had already assumed almost as a given that there would be at least some type of short-term extension, and that's partly because, you know, as I said, it's sort of the whole Groundhog's Day scenario where we're back at a point where somehow the Democrats feel backed into a corner and there's a deadline looming. Just based on the calendar, in order to pass a bill through the Senate, go to a conference with the House, reach an agreement and send it to the president, you're past the date of expiration of the Protect America Act. From our point of view, that would be just fine. if the legislation were to expire and we went back to FISA with its old warrant requirements and insurance that Americans' privacy rights were at least somewhat protected and without telecom immunity, you know, we think that the United States would not only be able to fight terrorism better, but we'd also have a more robust protection for our Constitution. But be that as it may, I think we had assumed that there would be some short-term extension, and it doesn't surprise me that Senator Reid is saying that today, because I think, you know, he can count the days just as well as I can.
Okay, our next question comes from Corey Bowles. Go ahead, Corey.
Hi, guys. How you doing, sir?
Two
quick ones for you. One, just about the poll results. Can you just take us through quickly what the specific numbers are for those who are opposed to immunity? You said by a 24-point margin, but I don't believe you actually said what the split was.
I'm sorry. The when we ask it in using the term amnesty, 55% say the court should decide, 35% say that they favor amnesty. When we use the word immunity, 33%. Support the idea of immunity, 57% are against immunity, saying instead that the court should decide.
So pretty similar to the poll results of last year. I think it was 59% against last year, wasn't it?
It's a good question. I don't have that in front of me to tell you.
I'm sure I can take it up. Just about more widely than about the issue of immunity, how do you guys see things playing out? I mean, we've just had this question about a delay. Once things do hit the floor, what's your sort of read of the tea leaves as to how things might actually play themselves out?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that a short-term extension clearly doesn't do is it doesn't give any immunity to the telecommunications company. So on that level, we certainly see the additional time as being helpful to us to do further outreach to make sure that the people that Mark mentions, that large majority that opposes it, have more and more opportunities to contact their members of Congress to raise their voices, express their opinions. So I think from that vantage point, it's not harmful. I think we also have the opportunity to continue to consolidate the effort we have with Senator Dodd and Senator Feingold and others who are going to be leading the charge to stop this. And you know, the House is very set against. Certainly the House Democratic leadership has said they're very set against telecom immunity. And so I think we'll be working both of those angles to see what we can do to prevent it from moving forward in any final bill.
Okay, our next question comes from Sandra Torrey. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandra Torrey from USA Today. I'm sorry, I may have missed part of the last answer, so forgive me. Is there a bill in the Senate which you would prefer, and if so, what would that do, not only regarding immunity, but regarding the warrant issues, and how much of a chance does that have?
Well, thanks for that question. We do prefer the Senate Judiciary Committee bill, and there are the two issues that you highlight are exactly why we prefer it. One, it does not provide immunity to the telecom. It does not speak to that issue at all. But two, and I think more significant from a basic the viewpoint of our constitutional rights, is that the Senate Judiciary Committee bill provides greater court oversight of the domestic surveillance, and so ensures that some of the current structure of FISA is still in place. And for us, that is really ultimately the heart of the issue.
And are the chief sponsors of that bill, and does it have any possibility of getting to the floor?
Well, the chief sponsor is Senator Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it is in an odd sort of situation. The Senate Judiciary Committee bill is actually pending as a substitute amendment to the Senate Intelligence Committee bill. And that's just simply by virtue of how the parliamentarian in the Senate assigned the issues, so that it went first to the Intelligence Committee and then their bill went to the Judiciary Committee, which basically struck everything in the Intelligence Committee, produced their own bill, which then appeared as an amendment to the Senate Intelligence Committee bill. And this is a little bit arcane, but I think the heart of the matter is that Senator Reid, as the leader, can either take up that bill, which sits on the calendar after it got voted out of Judiciary, and that is the Senate Intelligence Committee bill with the Senate Judiciary Committee bill as an amendment that would strike all of the underlying substance in the Intelligence Committee bill. Or he could just take up the Senate Judiciary Committee bill as it stands, which we have been urging. He is the leader. He can do that. He does not have to depend on the parliamentarian, who's not an elected official, last time I checked, to decide what should be on the Senate floor. And the reasons that we think that's so critical is that what he has done is he has put the burden on those people who believe that the telecom shouldn't get off the hook for illegal lawbreaking. He has made those people who believe in the rule of law, who believe that people who break the law should have to be held accountable, just like your average person on the street, and certainly just because they're major campaign contributors or they have political power in any other way, shouldn't give them a special deal. But what he's done is he's put the burden on Senator Dodd, he's put the burden on Senator Feingold, he's put the burden on Senator Leahy to actually strip out the immunity provision now. If he started with their bill that came out of the Judiciary Committee bill, it would be on those who want immunity who would have the burden of putting it in, which I just remind you in the Senate typically requires 60 votes.
Does the Judiciary bill have support from Republicans? Is Spector on it?
Spector is not on it, but there have been in negotiations about how to bring him on board. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Siobhan Gordon. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the immunity proposals that are in play. It sounds like the sort of variations on ways to sort of truncate the immunity element of it have proliferated, and you had also referred to sort of what Senator Dodd and Feingold are up to now. So if you could just sort of lay out kind of the key amendments that you would watch in terms of gauging, you know, the strength of these immunity provisions.
Hi, Siobhan. This is Tim Sparapani. I'm
Hi.
Senior counsel's here. I'm actually going to respond to the immunity question, and I'll invite Caroline, of course, to chime in if I've forgotten some things. There will be, I think, multiple efforts to modify or come to some sort of midpoint with respect to immunity, and I'm not sure how they can do that because, frankly, you either give some sort of blanket authority that protects the legal rights of people like the ACLU and the private citizens who are suing to have their private rights enforced in the court of law, or you grant some sort of blanket authority for the government officials who, despite the law, asked for immunity and engaged in illegal wiretapping, and the telecom companies, both the email providers and the phone companies that provided them. But nevertheless, there will be some efforts to sort of find a midpoint. And one of those will be, I think, led by Senator Whitehouse, perhaps with the assistance of Senator Spector and Senator Feinstein, although the cast of characters who have been negotiating over this proposal have sort of changed and ebbed and flowed over the last several months as the language moved back and forth. So we expect to see some effort either on the floor or perhaps as the bill is brought to a conference committee or at least a pre-conference committee negotiation between the House and Senate versions of the bill, where that amendment would say the court cases would be heard before perhaps the FISC, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And what would happen under that proposal, supposedly, is that the FISC would determine in the private chambers whether or not the companies had a good faith belief that the documents that they did receive from the government gave them the authority to facilitate wiretapping. Now, obviously, we're opposed to that proposal because, one, we think it lets the government actors off the hook, and number two, what it would do is it would have a judicial determination taking place in a secret court where only one party, in this case the government, would be allowed to actually bring arguments. So the ACLU, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the other private plaintiffs would not have their say to show how the documentation that was received from the government by the telecom companies, or alleged documentation, was inadequate and didn't follow FISA. So I think that's sort of the chief proposal or amendment that would be offered. There will also be an amendment, which of course we support. That will be offered by Senator Webb, a Democrat from Virginia, a freshman Democrat from the South, and Senator Feingold. And that amendment would actually seek to strip out the immunity grant that is in the base Senate Intelligence Committee bill on the floor. So this is an amendment that we obviously are eager to see pass. We think that it will attract a fair amount of support. We hope it will be enough. And what it would do is, again, it would strike any immunity grant from the bill itself.
Do you have any sense, when you say a fair amount of support, do you have any idea sort of what you'd be looking at in terms of proportion?
I don't know if we would want to hazard a guess as to how many senators will ultimately vote for that proposal. Again, as Caroline has said, the procedural posture that amendment has been put in is exactly opposite of what it should be. And again, if you look at the numbers that Mark Mellman has just laid out, what's clear is that the procedural posture is exactly contrary to the position that the public is in, which is that they oppose some sort of get-out-of-jail-free card. So we're working to get the message out. I think I've misspoken. I said it was a Webb amendment. It's a Dodd-Feingold.
Okay, I was wondering about that.
I apologize.
Dodd and Feingold?
That's right.
Okay.
And Siobhan, this is Caroline. If I could just say one thing. I think... we can't give you an exact whip count.
But, no, of course not.
I do have to say that that our outreach and lobbying efforts are we are finding a lot of support for the Dodd-Feingold amendment. And the question is really, the hard question is unfortunately, can we get to 60, which is far different from getting to 40. And so, part of our effort is to try and, put this on a different footing. But we are, putting a lot of pressure on those moderates in both parties who might be gettable. And we're looking at, across the board, you can probably imagine who they are. And that's, where some of our advertising is targeted and some of our sort of most aggressive grassroots activities.
Presumably members who are up for re-election in some form or another.
Yeah, depending. Wherever, Siobhan, our method is to be effective wherever we can. So if there's some additional leverage through people's feeling of vulnerability, then we're going to use that leverage if we can.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Lisa. Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, hi, thanks. It's Lisa Mascaro at the Las Vegas Sun. I wanted to ask a little more actually about what you just mentioned, the media campaign and the ads. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more specifically where those are going to be running. I'm wondering if you have anything specifically in Nevada. And I'm also wondering, you had mentioned the anger that you find out in the community toward leadership on this issue, if any of your ads are specifically naming, Senator Reid or or his role in the procedural, moves on this. Thank you.
Sure, Lisa. We are running ads in a series of places, but we are also running ads nationally on blogs. So they're actually they're directed at everybody ultimately, and we can provide you with a link to the ad. Liz also mentioned to me that I should remind you guys that there's a link to Mark's memo on our website at the bottom of the media advisory. So you can get all the data that way, but we can also show you the ads. They are radio. They're playing, as I said, in targeted districts, and we'd be happy to direct you to where you can listen to the ad. As far as Senator Reid, we have not launched an ad specifically with him, but we do have a whole variety of other, maybe you could call them materials, that are viral and so forth that do mention his name. As I said, we think he is the Democratic leader. He is the majority leader, and as a result of that, he does have the control of the agenda. He determines what is going to be on the Senate floor on a day-to-day basis, and he has the ability to decide that the Senate Judiciary Committee bill is the place to start. And Lisa, I think I mentioned this to you before, but I think ultimately, actions speak louder than words, and if he really opposes telecom immunity, then he needs to do more than say it. He needs to show it, and we haven't seen it. So until we see it, we're going to keep asking him to do the right thing and put the Judiciary Committee bill on the floor, or better yet, let the whole darn thing expire and go back to FISA.
Okay, our next question comes from Lawrence Hurley. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Hi, this is Lawrence Hurley from the LA Daily Journal. I just wanted to ask, you mentioned before about White House's and Feinstein maybe trying to create some middle ground. Can you say whether, does Feinstein have her own proposal, or is she just tagging along with White House?
No, in fact, that's a fair point. She has, in fact, discussed having her own separate standalone amendment that would be similar to the White House amendment. And that, it would ask for some sort of good faith determination by a court. And then if that good faith determination went in favor of, say, the plaintiffs, then the lawsuits would commence. But as of now, we understand that amendment has not been queued up for offering. It may yet be.
So how does it differ from the White House one?
It really is down to the fine details about which court would hear it, under what circumstances, and what the standard that the court would be judging the good faith determination based upon.
Okay. Thanks.
And if I could just say, you know, Senator Feinstein's obviously a linchpin here. You know, she has the cases that are basically proceeding in her own backyard with many, many, many Californians as plaintiffs. So we very much hope that she works to make sure those lawsuits can go forward and that people can have their privacy rights vindicated rather than works to cut them off and give a special present to the telecom companies.
Yeah, our next question comes from Sandra Torrey. Go ahead.
I wondered on your radio ads, do you know if anybody on the other side of this issue is running any kind of ads in members' districts?
You know, that's an interesting question, I think, but I doubt it, and part of it is because the other side is either the Bush administration or the telecom companies, and the telecom companies have been very, very sub rosa on this entire effort. They tend to favor dark rooms, martinis, and cigars over the sunshine of everyday living. So while we're out there talking about the issue, they're in the back room helping to convey in very private terms why this is so important to members of Congress. I don't think they're going to be on the airwaves. And the reason is, just as Mark has elucidated, the public thinks this stinks.
And I'm sorry, when are your ads running? Are they currently running?
They are currently running.
And we can get like a list of the cities and so forth and places where they are?
We can follow up with you and
okay.
Have you listen to the ads and things.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Ben Strickland. Go ahead.
Thank you. It's Ken Strickland with NBC News. A couple of questions. One, what have your conversations been, if any, with the Democratic presidential candidates on their positions? Will they be standing firm with Dodd and Feingold in their opposition to this? And secondly, have you at all considered or talked to the leadership about an extension that would go beyond the presidential campaign into next year, keeping the PPA at the status quo, maybe with the possibility of a new a Democrat in the White House?
Well, those are both very good questions. On the first one, we have had ongoing discussions with all of the presidential campaigns, not just the Democrats. We've just had a little bit more welcome reception from the Democrats. We are absolutely expecting them to stand with Senator Dodd. I think, just because he's no longer in the presidential race doesn't mean that their promise to oppose telecom immunity goes away. So we are trying to make sure that they know that we're watching, that their commitments are not forgotten. They haven't changed their positions, and I think it will be unfortunate for them if they don't show up for the debate and the vote when it gets to that in the Senate, because this race is too close for that to go unnoticed. And we certainly will notice it, and we will share what we notice with people who care, who tend to be very active in primaries. As far as a longer-term extension, We have not had conversation. I know there are rumors floating around, but let me just say our basic perspective on this is that I don't think it is acceptable to have legislation that was condemned as terrible legislation by Democratic leaders when it was 6 months long being extended for 12 months or 18 months. I don't think that the ACLU can't accept that. I don't think the American people can accept that. If it was bad at 6 months, it's three times as bad at 18 months.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Well, thanks, everybody. And as I mentioned, Mark's memo on the polling results is available. There's a link at the bottom of the media advisory, and if you want more information about the ads or to listen to them, please contact us and we will help make that happen. And we appreciate any follow-up questions. Please call our press line at 202-675-2312, and we look forward to speaking with you further. Thanks, Mark, very much.
Thank you.